Do you believe in life after love, after love, after love? I really think talking up. Hi, everybody. It's Shire, and you're listening to Jonah Radio.
If this is going to be that kind of party, I'm going to stick my dick in the mashed potato.
Neil, girl! Out here, just a little bit stranger.
I construct ground for you.
Valediction.
I don't understand. It's just fun. In defense of Coldplay.
Hey, bud. Good party.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Jonah Radio. Can't be here because he's buying a bootleg Goonies shirt from the stand down the hall. It's just cash. We recorded this chat between Jonah and Gerard Way this last weekend at LA Comic Con. We were going to do a wrap around for it, do some music news for you news heads out there. But Neil got sick and threw up on his feet in the shower, apparently. And so we didn't want to do that because last week, Ephraim Eels threw out some major allegations of Neil sucking. And frankly, we didn't want to do anything without Neil having a chance to rebut those allegations. So we're just putting this out this week. Thank you so much for listening. Gerard Way, you probably know of him or his work in some way. He fronts the band My Chemical Romance, writes a lot of songs for that. He also, while he was doing that, decided he was going to create some comic books and created a really great comic book called The Umbrella Academy. Jonah and he talk about both of those things. You may also know the Umbrella Academy from the current Netflix series that it is. And he's also writing the comic Doom Patrol for DC. I've heard very good things about that. Very good talk. I saw it live. So this week, I just want you to enjoy that, rest up, and come back for next week. Because Neil was fiery. I've talked to him. And he's going to settle these allegations. All right. Listen up.
Hey, soul sister. This is the guy from Train, and you can bet drops to Jupiter that you're listening to Jonah Radio.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Gerard Way, everybody. Welcome to Ray Way. Where we talk about the events of the day with Ray and Wade. Gerard, thanks for coming here and
no
doing
problem.
This.
Yeah.
What I want to talk to you about is, as somebody that does a ton of stuff, I want to talk about like what you use in your life to stay sane.
Right.
Because as someone like myself, who like it's like you know I'll act in things or I'll do stand up or I'll do podcasts,
right.
But I also like you know put out records and
right.
do music and help other people put out their comedy music. Like it's like and I use this as a way not to spread myself thin, but to just almost just be creative in any way I can think of. And now I want to know about like your process because you've done that same stuff of just tons of different things,
mm-hmm.
but to a very successful level.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know how these things influence each other.
Sure.
So it's like, we can start with when you were young, what was the, was it music or comics first or was it simultaneous?
Well, it was comics first. So I had my tonsils out in the third grade and my grandmother bought me one of those three packs of comics. And
yeah.
The only one I remember there was a Captain America and a couple others. And that was my first real exposure to comics. I had a little exposure to some Archie comics, a little younger. But so it was those. And I fell in love with them right away. And it seemed like a real... So I started drawing my own and writing my own.
Yeah.
And it felt like a really good way to express myself.
And that, and like, do you still have any of those comics? Like, that you were, like, and was it, you know, Harvey Pekar style where they, you know, you're just drawing lines and stick figures, or were you really getting into the art and the story simultaneously?
I was getting into the art and the story simultaneously. Like, yeah. I think the first character I created was named Icicle.
Bicycle?
Icicle.
Oh, Icicle.
And he was like this little kid with ice powers, you know.
But he wasn't Iceman.
He wasn't Iceman, no. No, he was a teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a. Do you ever feel of the need to kind of like throw in Iceman or sorry, Ice? What was Ice?
Icicle.
Wait, Icicle. What's like? Will Icicle ever come back in any way?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't. I think I may have one drawing of him somewhere.
Yeah.
And then I did one in art school. I was like, oh, let me draw Icicle.
Nice.
And so I drew him, and it was kind of fun. It was like updated, you know. But yeah. it was comics first.
Yeah.
You know?
And so you're young and you're into comics. And then when does music the next interest?
Yeah. Yeah. The next thing that comes to me is music. I'd gotten an acoustic guitar, probably like around maybe the fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had taken a couple lessons. Didn't really stick with them, but then. Just having that guitar in my life, later on, I would come back to it.
Yeah.
And I remember when my parents bought me my first electric guitar off of one of my friends, and I can't even remember the name of it, but it was like kind of a Les Paul guitar.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of started making up my own songs, and then I was, so then it was, that was my big thing. I wanted to be in a band, and so I was, I joined this band with a couple kids from school, and I got kicked out.
Oh, no. What was their reason?
I was really bad at guitar. So.
Why don't you go back to making comic books?
Yeah, I couldn't play. I wanted to do original songs, and they wanted to do cover songs.
Really? What kind of, do you remember what?
Yeah, the reason I got kicked out is because I couldn't play Sweet Home Alabama.
No.
So then I thought, oh, what am I going to do now? That was my big plan. I was going to be in a band. So I was like, I guess I'm going to learn how to really write and draw comics. So then I spent a whole summer like tracing Rob Liefeld, Jim Lee, like, you know, Tom McFarlane, like just tracing it all.
Yeah.
And then eventually after that summer, I stopped needing to trace, and I was able to then kind of slowly develop my own style.
So in a way, you wouldn't play covers in that band, but then right. You were essentially using that whole summer to do covers of comic books.
I was doing covers, of comics. But it was really like to learn how to draw, and I think that's a valid way to kind of learn is by imitating others. And
yeah, because it's almost just like the physical memory of like moves and whatnot and
shapes.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like how do you get that shape? How do you get that line? And then it became more automatic. So that was then my focus, because I was like, well, I wasn't able to pull off the band thing.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll be a comic creator, you know.
And there's still a lot of time before that worked out for him.
Yeah. yeah, there is.
But it's is it a thing? Because I know sometimes when I'm saying like writing, I got to get a script in, and I kind of just get tired or just a little bit fatigued of that process.
Yeah.
And then I like that I can go and play drums or go and pick up a guitar.
Right.
And was that still kind of happening?
Not yet.
No,
it
not yet.
It wasn't until like later in my life
that you were able to just go.
Kind of go back and forth. Yeah.
So you had a laser focus of in this time.
Yeah, because I had already felt that I had failed at music.
You thought that was it.
So then my fallback was comic artist.
Yeah. So not even for the joy of playing music, because you like. So was there a bit of like you're like if the music thing isn't going to be my main deal in my life, I don't want to do it at all.
Kind of at the time, but I was also like 15, 14.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
Which is like that's the kind of thing that you would do. That you're like it's like no, I'm done with that. Such childish things, such as music. I'm going to create comics.
Yeah, I was like I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
So. So then, So then, you know, that led to me writing my first comic at 15, and getting published, and that was a really cool experience.
How is there? That must have been insane. Did you know other people your age doing comic books?
Yes. The artist of the series was a year older than me in high school. I think I was a sophomore and he was a junior, and he was the best artist I'd ever seen.
Wow.
Like, I thought he was better than, like, professionals.
Yeah.
And his name was Jose, Santos, and he was phenomenal, and we became friends, and then we started making comics together, and then he was the artist at like 16 years old. He was a published, I think I was 15, he was 16.
That's crazy. And yeah. then, so in a way, you kind of put together another band. Like another, kinda, like it's like,
yeah.
like at least like a collaboration or in some kind of a scene.
Yeah, and then one of my friends from, so right around this period, I discovered this comic shop, and it became a really big, important part of my life. Mm. And at that comic shop, I met our inker, Dana Green, who was an art teacher in
wow.
East Orange, I think. He became the inker of the book. So so then we did that for a couple issues, and I think we just kind of, I don't know if it was that we got bored of it or, but we felt we had accomplished something, so like let's move on to other stuff. You know?
Yeah.
There's only two issues of it.
There's only two issues, and you. But at the time, you felt like you're like we did it.
Yeah. It was kind of, you know, I didn't. I've always struggled with like sticking with things.
Yeah.
So.
And so you do the two issues. You know, like, and I'm sure at that time was it also kind of. Were you hanging out with these guys as well? Like, was it?
Oh yeah,
also...
me and Jose live like three blocks from each other.
Nice.
So we're together all the time, working on new stuff.
So being creative and like within like a friendship.
Yeah.
Which I felt like was very important to me when I was growing up.
Right.
Of just having friends that like making little sketches
mm-hmm.
or you know making bands, making fake bands
yeah,
for like
yeah,
a week.
Yeah.
Because that's the way we hung out.
Yeah, that's how I like to hang out.
Yeah.
Almost all of my friends. I ended up creating projects with, and
yeah.
that was fun. We would hang out in my mother's kitchen and sit at the kitchen table and just, and then I got a whiteboard really young too, and we put a whiteboard up in the kitchen and
oh.
I would like...
just turned it into the writer's room.
Yeah, that's what we did. And then I used those comics to get into the School of Visual Arts in New York.
Yeah.
So that helped me get in. At the time, my drawing had gotten pretty decent, too. And I had an art class that went like three or four periods in high school.
Whoa.
My senior year was really cool. I was only in school for like that art class, one English class, and then I went and worked at the supermarket.
Jeez.
So I figured all these ways to get out of school. Like,
yeah.
I did work study, and I did this really long art class. So
yeah. Were you a good student?
I was okay. I was like kind of a C average,
yeah.
you know. But stuff like art, I would get like a B in.
And I would raise the GPA.
Yeah. But I was generally a C student. I only did the minimum of work to get me through high school.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just it's a thing too when you start to get a. Again, and this is not. We're not saying this is what you should do if you're still in high school. But like, it's like once I found like. Ways that I like to be express myself artistically.
Mm-hmm.
I found myself being less interested in school, in school politics,
yeah.
like in school, like the social scene. Because it's like, you know, once I get out of school, I could go to a record store or a comic book shop or get together with my friends and actually make stuff.
Yeah.
While everyone else was, you know, doing stupid stuff like homework.
Yeah, at a certain point in like math class, and I had to take like the remedial math because I'm really bad at math.
Same.
So I failed algebra twice and, then I finally passed in summer school, and then they made me do geometry, and I was like, all right, I've been here. I'm going to fail this, and then I'm going to have to go to summer school. So I asked them to put me in, like, really basic math, where they really just showed you how to write checks, which is funny, because if you're in basic math, you're probably not going to be writing a lot of checks.
Yeah.
At least that's how I saw it at the time.
Yeah, math was terrible for me, too.
Nothing wrong with being great at basic math.
Yes. So you have this whole other world outside of high school.
Yeah.
That didn't have anything to do with the people in high school.
Right.
And
yeah, it was the comic shop. And another way that we were really creative together is we would play role playing games together.
Oh, great.
That was the big thing.
Yeah.
D&D? And I would, what's that?
Was it D&D?
It was D&D at first in the third grade, and by the time I had become part of this group at the comic shop, we were playing everything from like GURP Supers to Call of Cthulhu. I'm trying to remember all. We would constantly, there would be like five games a week.
Yeah.
And then we would do these things called all-nighters where we would go to somebody's house and spend the night and stay the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would just play all night.
That's crazy.
And I learned how to become a storyteller by being like a like a game master, like a dungeon master.
Yes. Yeah, that is like a, such a great way to like learn to like to perform at all. Mm-hmm. It's you know, some of the best stand-ups I know are grew up being dungeon masters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a way to get a point across and you know, bring some emotion
and
to it.
And it was really creative too, because you would create your own worlds. And as a GM, I always like to have a partner. I always really liked having a collaborative partner.
Yeah.
I've always done really good with collaborators. And so even with my role-playing games, I would have another player that was kind of the inside player.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't give special treatment to. In fact, they would have it hardest sometimes, but they were helping me tell the story. So we would sit there and brainstorm like, all right, what is this world?
Yeah.
All this. And they would kind of, that player would kind of help me keep everybody on track.
Yeah.
You know? So it was kind of like cheating a little bit, I guess, you know?
But it's still fun, because it's supposed to be fun.
And it was all about the stories. And,
yeah.
You know, my friend Stu and I, we created this really amazing, like, Star Wars universe. I mean, we played Star Wars, so it was already an established universe, but we created this really amazing Star Wars game that took place in the future. And
really?
Yeah, and we played that through college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, we're still playing through college, you know.
And so, and I got to know, like, it's, at this time, are you, you know, are you going, are these friends, these groups of friends, are you also going out to see bands play? Are you going to see, listening to music?
Yeah, so one of my friends that I met in art school when we were in a comic book class together was named Sean Dillon. He ended up becoming, like, a really amazing comic artist, but he was into stuff... one of us was wearing a Milk and Cheese shirt, and so we realized we were kind of the outsiders in the class.
Yeah.
He would read Hate and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's how I met Ray Toro, was through him, because he was in a band with Ray Toro.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he was in this band with Ray Toro, and I remember seeing Ray Toro play live and thinking, this is the greatest guitar player ever.
Yeah.
You know?
And then that's like, that's a huge thing. It's I like the idea of wearing, you know, shirts of like bands or things you like, because it is essentially raising that flag for that moment. Like here, it's like, you know, you see everyone's kind of wearing stuff, but like it's like when you're out and about and you see someone like, you know, wearing like a Black Flag shirt, you kind of
go,
there's like a little bit of, you know, I know a little bit about you.
Yeah, that stuff is helpful during those years, you know? For sure, and that's how I met friends. I remember John Rivera, who wrote Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye. The way we met, we were in a comedy writing class together in art school, and he was wearing an Avengers shirt, but not the comic book Avengers, the old 60s British spy show. And that's how we started talking. So.
And so so during this time, it's like you're taking in, you know, comic books are your focus, but you're still taking in all these other forms of media that you're just you're a fan of.
I'm a fan of it. I'm a fan of being creative. I'm a fan of working with people at this point, you know. And then...
And have you still picked up that guitar?
Every once in a while, because at that point, I actually had started this band with a couple of friends called Rega and Jones, and that was during art school. It was kind of Weezer-ish, maybe a little more, progressed a little in a different direction than that. So I had a Fender Stratocaster I had asked my parents to buy me, and then we were playing in this band. Then I graduated art school, and then I really hit the pavement trying to get jobs in art. But it was the period in comics after the big speculator boom in the 90s. So comics were in a really bad place. So people had just, you know, comic books were going from selling millions down to a lot lower. And I know today they're even lower. But at the time... The only way to get in was to be somebody established that would bring in numbers, and that's kind of the way it still is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know? So I had unsuccessfully I had done a couple of tryouts and things like that. I got a page in one book. And it wasn't that I didn't feel like I had failed at that, because then that led me to getting this job doing toy design.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Where I could kind of hone my craft. And so.
Yeah. And right, that's like a job, like toy design is like a place where you're employed, you're going in, it's a 9-to-5.
Yeah, I was in Hoboken, and it was called Fun House, and I would commute every day and just go there, and I'd get to draw all day, and my art got so much better, and I was learning how to do turnarounds of action figures.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I was working on a lot of Marvel stuff.
And that's a real earn while you learn kind of environment.
And I got paid really well, and that was right when I started to pick up the guitar again.
Oh, is it because you like relegated your creativity at work, drawing and whatnot, that part of your brain to those hours at work.
Right.
So then you get home and you're like, well, I've been drawing all day. I want to, use a different part of my brain.
Right.
Different part of my creative brain.
And I forgot, like, before the toy job, because that was when I was, like, settling, I had, I was an intern on this show called Sheep in the Big City, which was a Mo Willems show.
Oh, wow.
Which is on Cartoon Network, and I was basically a photocopy boy, and I would just do that, and then I ended up pitching a show to the show's producer, and then I was in meetings with Cartoon Network for this Breakfast Monkey show I was working on.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
that's
you just
before the toy job.
So you just had tons, you were like just kind of, you just had a creativity bounding out of you.
Yeah, totally.
In this way. Mm-hmm. And then, and it was drawing, it was pitching show ideas. Were you writing scripts?
I was doing storyboard scripts.
Yeah, storyboard scripts.
Yeah, I was doing them like that. I would literally draw everything out for an animatic.
Oh, wow.
And then we made an animatic, and Cartoon Network, well, then 9/11 happened. So, like, the day I was supposed to go and prep for our big Cartoon Network meeting was the day 9/11 happened.
Oh, wow.
And so then after that, nobody was coming to work.
Yeah.
I mean, to New York. And Cartoon Network was like, well, we're not going to be up there for a while.
Yeah,
you know,
just
obviously,
in Atlanta.
You
yeah.
know? And then eventually they just passed on it because they had another food show called Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Oh, so, which no
which
one
I
ever
ended
heard of
up
again.
Loving. oh, man. We used to watch that on the bus and just laugh for hours, you know.
But was there a little bit of you going, this should have been mine?
Not really, because it was so good.
Yeah, it was so good.
I was like, this is better than my show.
Yeah.
But they were also so different. They were very different. Breakfast Monkey was a lot different. It was like this little magical flying monkey that talked like Bjork, so, you know. It was just different. It was a little more innocent. It wasn't an adult show, but it wasn't really a kid show either.
Was there a little bit inside you're like, I wonder if we could get Bjork to actually do the Bjork.
Yeah, I thought about it, but I got really good at doing Bjork's voice.
Can we hear some of it?
No.
Just a little bit.
No.
Just a wee.
You can watch the animatic on YouTube, and you can hear me doing Bjork's voice.
Okay. And it was probably funnier than Dancer in the Dark.
I've not seen that, but I heard it's a really depressing
film. It's made
film.
Out of tears.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
So
9/11 happens, I pick up the guitar again, and then I write Skylines and Turnstiles.
Yeah.
And then I call up Otter, and then I call Ray, and then I get Mikey, and then we just build this momentum.
Wow, so this is like, this, and was it just because you, what was the feeling of like putting comics aside? Was it just because you kind of got fulfilled from the toy job, or was it just like this thing kind of, you just started feeling this other thing come out?
I was feeling this other thing. It became my therapy.
Yeah.
You know, from the PTSD that everybody had experienced from 9/11 and how to process that. And I'm also somebody who at the time, I believe I was maybe on Wellbutrin and I was dealing with depression.
Mm-hmm.
I've got like a chemical imbalance. That's kind of how my depression works. So I take medication to keep me balanced. Mm-hmm. And it works for me. I know that doesn't work for everybody, but I'm a big proponent for it, you know. And it's kept me really level for the last 7 years.
Oh, great,
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Good to see.
I know, I don't want to die anymore all the time. It's really it's really interesting.
And so these songs just start coming out
they
of you.
They just start coming out.
And then you're getting all these guys that you kind of play with there. Anyone from the Sweet Home Alabama band, did you call?
No. I heard they broke up. I'm just kidding.
I don't know
what happened to them. They were both really amazing players, I will say that.
Yes, of course.
They were cousins, and one was a drummer, one was a bass player.
Yeah.
And they kind of really liked Zeppelin. And that was just their thing.
That was their thing.
It was their thing.
And so, did you learn to prop? Because you said you were a bad guitar player.
Yeah.
And then, so when you started picking it up, had you learned more, or was it just the doing of it that really kind of, or was it like having a lack of ability helping you?
You know what it is? Being a little naive about it actually helped because I didn't fully understand chord structures yet.
Yeah.
So I would write something like Vampires Will Never Hurt You and yeah. And if you listen to the chords, and I'm doing a lot of weird stuff with like this finger being over here and I'm picking it. I know the original chord for that song was like this. It was like the hand was way down.
Yeah.
And so that helped. And then I was, regardless of what kind of skill I had at the guitar, I was always able to write songs.
Yeah.
So even back in my art school band, I was writing the songs.
The monkey cartoon, were there going to be songs in that as well?
Yeah, there was, and I wrote one. Actually, my first collaboration with Ray Toro was this song in the Breakfast Monkey animatic called Cruisin' for Crazy. You know, that was actually the first thing we worked on together.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was cool.
And so used, you know, just the way you like to, you like to have an idea, then you bring in collaborators.
Yeah, yeah.
To bring it to life, like you had with all these other things, and now, like, mm-hmm. you're like, I have these songs, and I'm assuming they were just you and a guitar, like with a tape recorder, kind of putting them together, or did you?
I can't even remember if it was, yeah, probably a tape recorder, and then like Ray really. And then we started collaborating on songs together.
Yeah.
We would rent a rehearsal space and just go in there. And then Ray really helped transpose those ideas that I would have into something that made sense.
Yes.
You know, he was such a good guitar player. He was able to, sometimes I was able to just sing stuff to him and he would play it, but make it a lot cooler.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. And so even like singing like a riff that goes like this.
Yeah. If I couldn't play it on the guitar, I would sing it to him. And then that kind of is how I would sit in his room with him, and that's how we generated the sound of the band.
Yeah.
We'd sit together, and sometimes I'd have a guitar, sometimes not. And then Ray had his own ideas.
Yeah.
He was really like, he learned how to play through listening to metal records.
Yes.
So he would play along in Metallica records and stuff.
Yeah.
And Pantera records. And that's how he.
Respect.
That's how he figured it out. So he would help get this stuff out of me, and then that formed the sound. We were trying to take bits of everything we love, like, or it'll be like kind of driving and fast like punk, but then it'll have metal and.
Yeah.
You know, the lyrics will be like storyteller lyrics. Like, I was really inspired by
all the little things that you've been working on.
Yeah, all the little stuff. Yeah, you know, like, I really liked Nick Cave, and he was a storyteller, and there wasn't a lot of storytelling happening in rock or music at the time. It was very much, like, about relationships, boyfriend-girlfriend stuff.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Especially, like, that area, you know, Jersey, you know, melodic hardcore, Lifetime and whatnot.
It was about, like, these kind of relationships, but nobody was doing really conceptual stuff or telling stories. So
yeah, and I think that was a result, like, of pop punk just kind of being like, it's like everyone kind of just started singing about high school almost, like old 50s music.
Yeah, pop punk was about the high school experience, boyfriend-girlfriend stuff, you know.
But because of you had this fantastical mind, you could, you know, do similar epic storytelling.
Yeah, I wanted to build worlds with music.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we started to do together, and bringing in like gothic elements or bringing in things like vampires and building this kind of thing. And there was always a momentum in My Chemical Romance. We would, it just like, we'd have our first practice and the song worked. The second practice, we'd have a new song. The third practice, we have Mikey on bass. The fourth practice, we just, every week there was a new thing that happened.
Yeah.
And then eventually Frank joined the band, and then, and we never stopped. It was like, oh, we have a show. Oh, then we have another show. Oh, now we're opening up for Jimmy World. Oh, it was like every
step. Wow, so it happened that quick.
Yeah, it happened really fast. There was a real momentum to it.
And so, and, you know, a lot of people here, we know the story, we know how great My Chemical Romance is, but there's a certain point you get to where you, because touring is tough.
Yeah, it is tough.
And you kind of have this idea where you're like, what, you do one show a night, you're on a bus the rest of the time, but you don't. A lot of people, like, and I didn't know this before I started going on these bus tours with Mystery Science Theater, where you do the show, and then it takes you a while to get, you know, done with the adrenaline. And then you sleep terribly on a bus.
Yep, that's
what happens. Once the bus stops, you sleep throughout the day just trying to recover from the night before. And you think you're going to get other stuff done, and you don't.
Well, I figured out how to, like, kind of game the system. So, like, I would, obviously, I'd be just like you, full of adrenaline at night. I'd be up for a little while. But then, luckily, I'd still wake up at about 10.
Okay.
And then I had all this time until sound check.
But your brain wasn't mush from just feeling tired?
It wasn't. It wasn't. You know, and I think a lot of it is because even though I used a lot of creativity in My Chemical Romance, it was still like a therapy.
Yeah.
So I had this other creative itch I wanted to scratch.
Yeah.
So I would wake up and I really missed comics. And I was on Taste of Chaos. And I got a bunch of markers and stuff, and I would literally set up in the dressing room, and I started creating the Umbrella Academy that way.
So that happened within, like, you just started coming up with this while the band was going on. And was there something inside you kind of going, like, it's like, I don't know, can I do both of these things at the same time, or am I going to have to choose?
The only thing I had to get rid of in my life was Warcraft. I literally quit Warcraft to write Umbrella Academy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good choice. Yeah, exactly.
And Warcraft's cool, but I wanted to be a little more proactive.
Yeah.
And I was like, the longer you play that game, it just gets harder and harder. And
yeah.
I think I was killing plants in the jungle and something like broke inside me and died inside me. And I was like, I'm not going to play this anymore.
Yeah.
Because I had been doing it for like 9 hours.
Yeah, you could have got something done in that time.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with like disconnecting.
No, it's healthy to have that.
Yes,
stuff.
For sure.
But being creative is my way to kind of disconnect. And to really disconnect, I read. That's my favorite thing to
okay,
do.
Okay, yeah.
It chills me out at night. I do it every night before bed.
And you know, so then you do Umbrella Academy. It's a huge hit. You win awards. Mm-hmm. It gets turned into a show. You're mm-hmm. working on another show. Like mm-hmm. it's you're still doing music. So now you're kind of like you're in that sweet spot where you're able to kind of, is that something that came with age, is how to not exhaust yourself with all your creative endeavors?
Yeah, no, it becomes really important to understand that you do have a limit to how much creativity you have. In a certain, you have a bandwidth, basically.
Yes.
It's not so much a limit. Your creativity could be limitless, but per day, you're only able to get out so much mm-hmm. until you have to recharge, go to sleep, read a book, you know, do something like that, you know, and then the next day you're fresh again and you could get more out of you. But I try to be careful about taking too many projects because I only have a certain amount of bandwidth, you know.
Yeah, art can overwhelm you.
It can,
because it saves you, and it's like any other kind of substance where you want it to give you all those feelings all the time.
Mm.
But there is a finite amount of you know, endorphins that you can get from it.
Yeah.
And then it starts to kind of hurt because you know you're trying to write, and that's when you start to get blocks.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, As we wrap up here, what's the kind of, to people who, a lot of people here, there's like, you know, cons are great because it's like a ton of creative people all in this place, and I'm sure they have different interests and they feel that they have to choose.
Yeah.
I was told that when I was playing in bands, but I wanted to do comedy.
I was told that a lot.
Yeah,
that
I was told
to
that.
Choose. And here's what I'll say about that. I actually do feel you need to focus on one.
Mm-hmm.
You could come to something else later, but sometimes you do need to hop around when you're trying to find out what the thing is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but I think focusing on one, getting that finished to a certain point where you can then present it to people or try to get a foot in the door and things like that.
Yeah.
Then you could kind of move on to the next thing. And each thing you do informs the next thing, and you learn from the first thing, and then you learn from the second, and you just keep going and going and going, and you kind of build up your own momentum.
Yes.
You know?
Awesome. Well, Gerard Way, everybody, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you, guys.
This is a testament to creativity unbridled.